everyone. Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. I'm glad we had a good turnout for Russ. Russ McSee currently resides in Gainesville. In his early days of sobriety, he was very involved in this meeting at NABA. He's got a long history here, and he'll be able to tell you a little about that. I've been going to meetings with Russ for about 9 years, but the first time we ever met, he rode his motorcycle down here on a stormy night. It was cold and stormy, and he's wearing the leather and the chaps, been wearing the goggles, and so he's got mud on his forehead and his cheeks, and he's dripping right down here on the second row right there. And got his man spread going, and it's the first time he'd been back. It was an important ride for him, and I guess he'll tell you about that too. But I asked him where he came from. I was like thinking he just rode in from Nevada or something, and he goes, Gainesville, Georgia. I said, so did I, but I was dry. It meant something to him to get here that night. And so that was a big night, and I have seen him work in this program for the last 9 years. I mean, tooth and nail. He is at so many meetings. He works with so many sponsees. One of my favorite guys in recovery. Russ, please come up.
Thank you, Tim. My name's Russ McCall, and I'm very grateful to be an alcoholic. I'm going to be late for my own funeral, I swear. I suffer from ADHD, and I tell my story different every time. It evolves, and I will try to tell you what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. I look around these walls here, and I just feel ghost of beautiful people that I love very much. Sky Chief, who I coined the phrase from Stan Parks, who some of you may know, but he tried to 12th step me when he was just in the his first year, I believe, downstairs. And I'm one of those revolving door kind of guys once upon a time. And I'm going to tell you how I work. People say how I work my program is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not my program. If you work the steps, you will find that there is only one result of the 12 steps, and that's a spiritual awakening. I'm going to tell y'all basically two different stories of recovery. And anyway, I'll give you a little bit about my background. I'm 67 years old. I pickle well. I was born in 1950 to, I was born into a family of overachievers. You know what I mean? My grandfather was the head Baptist missionary of Cuba for 20 years and had the highest honor bestowed on any American citizen before Batista kicked all the Americans out. I heard that story all my life. I never knew any of my grandparents except for one grandmother. My father was a small town doctor. He was a surgeon. He blessed six of us children with Dupuytren's, which is that your fingers draw up. But he had to quit being a surgeon, and he became a small town MD up in Ackworth, Georgia. That's where I'm from. To this day, there are a lot of people in Ackworth that think both my parents were doctors. Not the case. My mom had a degree in English, but she knew as much about medicine as my father, and I think she's a better doctor than anyway. I never let my father give me any injections. But, you know, he would take her out on house calls, and now they have NPs and all that kind of stuff. But she was also the first woman mayor elected in 1956. My mama cussed like a sailor, and she wasn't scared of anybody. And she helped Daddy out. And anyway, she registered all the African-American people in 1956, which wasn't too cool, you know. And Ackworth is a mill town. It had two mills in it. And I'm the only poor doctor son you probably ever meet. There were six children in the McCall family. My oldest brother died 5 years ago. He died sober. I remember trying to 12-step him when I was drinking. And he said, a lot of good that did you? I said, yeah, but it will work. I know it works, you know. You can't 12-step somebody when you're drunk. I'm going to tell y'all what not to do now. My mother always wanted me to be a preacher because she could say, you can tell everybody what not to do because you done it, you know. I was a bad little boy. I was the bad McCall boy. Mama had basically two sets of children, the three big kids, and she waited 5 years and then had three little kids. I'm the oldest of the three little kids. And all my older brothers and sisters were high achievers. I had all the teachers, and I got, why can't you be like Mose, Ham, and Sue? And, you know, I heard that horse manure all my life, and I was an asthmatic child. I always seek attention. I used to lie awake at night thinking about what I could do bizarre, you know, to get attention. I'm serious. That I worked at DeKalb Board of Health for 33 and a half actual years, but I was an environmentalist. I'm retired now. I should have been fired 1,000 times. I did some real bizarre stuff that they still talk about. How I kept my job was a miracle. And speaking of miracles, I'm going to talk about God, Sky Chief, or whatever y'all want to call him, power greater than yourself. I had two miracles happen this past week, and I've been pissed off at God all day, pissed off at my wife. I've just been moving furniture by myself, totally disjointed. Did not have a clue of what I was going to say, and then, damn, I'm on 985, and I got 28 minutes to get here, and I was doing 100 miles an hour trying to get here. But God in His infinite wisdom has a way of always protecting my butt. And I don't deserve it. Last Sunday, I had arrowed a deer, harvested a deer. I killed it. Okay. And it ran around the cove. I live on Lake Lanier. And my backyard is a precipice. You know, it just right there. And the lake's down, and there's a bank. And then I live on the shallow end of a big, deep cove. Well, being the brain surgeon that I am, I decided, well, I'm going to get my canoe. I don't want to drag that damn thing all the way up around the bushes and all that kind of good stuff. And I've got all kinds of insulation on and rubber boots and all that kind of stuff. So I decided, I'm going to get my canoe and I'm just going to paddle to the end of the cove and throw that buck in there and, you know, come up easier, softer way. We always look for that easier, softer way. And my little inner voice, which we should listen to most of the time, I didn't. I said, I ought to put a rope on that thing and let it down slow, because this, there's snow on the ground and the leaves, and like I say, it's a steep incline. Well, I have it behind me, and all of a sudden, the end of the canoe kind of swaps ends, and it knocks my legs out from under me, and I fall backwards into the front of the canoe, and the inertia just took me like a rocket. I knew what was coming, that bank, and you know, I was flopping around trying to, you know, jump out of the damn thing. I couldn't do it. I was going too fast, and it happened so quick, and I zip off of that bank. But by that time, I had been able to flip the damn canoe, and I land upside down in the water. I didn't even hit the dirt. I hit the water. I was going so fast, and the canoe trapped me underneath the water, and I'm struggling to get my breath and all that kind of stuff. Of course, my wife doesn't know where I'm at. No fishermen on the lake. My neighbor, they're up in Jasper, so either the buzzards would have found me, or my dog, if my wife let him out maybe 6 or 7 hours later. But I was laying on my back in about 2.5-3 feet of water, and I finally got a little bit of air and was just about able to get out from under, just to push my boat and my canoe up off of me. But I can swim like a fish, but I almost drowned, and it scared the bejesus out of me. And you know, I give that credit to Sky Chief. He saved me so many times, and so many times he saved so many people on the road when I drove drunk, and I only drove drunk with days that ended in Y. And I loved to get in the car and ride around, you know, drinking. That's what we did in the 60s and 70s. Didn't do other things until the early 70s. But I can tell you, one Friday afternoon, I was melancholy, and my girlfriend had just broken up with me, and I rode around 285, and it was 64.2 miles on the inside, and then I rode around the other way. It took me about 3 6-packs of beer to ride around that far, and I think it was 64.2 miles. But, you know, we do bizarre stuff like that. And alcohol led me down paths that it was fun for a while, but it got scary drunk. Scary drinking, you know. When you're drinking against your will and you're crying in your beer and you don't want to have that drink, that's some pretty damn scary drinking. Getting back to my family, My mother was elected mayor 4 times, and my father was, oh, did I mention he was a barbiturate addict? My mother was an amphetamine addict. My mama was a drunk, and my father, I never saw him drink, but I had about a 400% predestined chance to be socially unacceptable. And I was sickly with asthma all my life. The only good thing about asthma, it kept me from going to Vietnam. I flunked my physical because of my asthma. And it kind of went away when I started smoking cigarettes. No figure. I mean, I tell doctors that, and they look at me like I fell off a turnip truck. But I don't like doctors either. My mama's brother was Attorney General of the state of Georgia for 20 years. So, you know, he couldn't touch me with a 10-foot pole. I would have killed him politically really big time because I was always getting into trouble. Or it found me, basically. I didn't go looking for it. It found me. But when you drink like I drink, or I drank, then bad things happen to us. We all know how to drink. I'm not going to try to make this a drunk-along. I carried a badge with the DeKalb County Board of Health. I inspected restaurants. My expertise was on-site sewage disposal. I'm a hockeyologist, you know. I know my shit. Usually I try to keep it in one sock, but not necessarily so all the time. And excuse my language, we try to clean up our language when we get sober, you know. I was always taught, if you tell your story, you wear a coat and you wear a tie, and you give some other suffering alcoholic that's had a few days under their belt, we give each other hope. And that's what I want to bring. That's what my message is tonight, is to give you hope. I think I left my big book on top of my car and my watch, my cigarettes. I drove down here 100 miles an hour, and I didn't have a cigarette or anything to smoke. And I just praying, you know, I wasn't going to get pulled over. But, you know, at least I wouldn't go to jail for a DUI, which I'm a master of DUIs. Not as many as some, but six is my lifetime batting average. And first one was running the chief of police of Ackworth off the road. And that was actually letting me go a week before. And because who I was, or not who I was, who my family was, I got away with some stuff. But I also learned to fight real early in my life, because growing up in a mill village, you know, it's a hard life, you know. And being a doctor's son, everybody thought I was rich, my family was rich and all. And my father, if he got paid, he got paid somebody keeping his bird dogs or maybe some greens or whatever. You know, that's just the way it was. When I got grown and had to go to doctors of today, I wouldn't give Aaron a drug for any of the doctors I know of, you know, basically. But they are overworked and all that. But my father and mother both went out on house calls in the middle of the night. I've seen dead people on our front porch. I've seen this, that, and the other, you know, as a young child. My older brothers and sisters went to college. I was the oldest at home. I knew what to do when my father would go into convulsions. I fit a lot of different programs, adult children of alcoholics, and Al-Anon. I don't gamble because I don't like to lose money, but I don't gamble because I know I like it too much, you know. I did go to one NA meeting once upon a time, and I think a long timer in NA might have 5 years, I don't know, but I'm not trying to say anything bad about NA, but the language that is used there is straight off the street, and I don't like it. You know, we clean up ourselves and we clean up our language. And when I first hit the doors of AA, well, let me give you my background. I had my first drink at 12 years old. My oldest brother bought me a half can of Budweiser, and Lord, I wish I could have got drunk off of a half can of Budweiser again. But I was toasted and fell in Dick's Creek trout fishing. But I liked it, you know. I didn't have to think about all the, you know, the embarrassing moments and can't have anybody over at the house because of my father. I was going to write a book, and my sister's trying to write a book or piss me off to make me write a book. And I was going to entitle it, Tell Them Daddy's Sick. I was made to lie for my father. We all were. And it was a big family secret, but it wasn't that big of a secret, you know. Crazy can't hide for very long, or addiction can't hide for a long time. And my wife is a psychiatric nurse practitioner of all things, you know. And I got a sign that I have by Duck Dynasty, and it's one of the guys that says, just because you're smart doesn't mean you're smart. You know what I mean? And that's about the way my wife is. She's also in the fellowship, but you know, some of us are just too hip, slick, and cool and smart for the program, you know. And I had heard about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hit the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I called first. It was 1977. I don't know if any of y'all know Brian Y. Lives around. If you go to the men's meeting, you know Brian. He's been around since 1977. And I used to give him rides, but I called AA because, you know, I knew I had a problem. My second DUI, I ran the Georgia State Patrol off the road on my baby brother's graduation. So, you know, I don't do well behind the steering wheel. I break out in handcuffs. I'm not proud of it, but I shudder to think of all the people that I could have possibly killed, you know, driving. Didn't care about me. I would have loved to have died, but I could not live knowing that I killed another human being because of my drunk driving. But I'd never thought about that when I was behind the wheel, you know. I was always at the wrong place at the wrong time. Those damn cops, you know, they just come out of nowhere. And like I say, I carried a badge, and it got me out of trouble a lot of times. I could, if I wasn't slurring too bad, I could kind of talk my way out of it. I carried the special officer's card too. My last one, though, when I threw it at the cop, I had a motorcycle on top of me in my driveway. I thought I was safe, but I was on the county roadway. We got about 2 or 3 hours, don't we, Tim? Okay. Anyway, I used to race motocross. I got scars. I've got all kinds of pins and screws holding my shoulders. And I threw that thing at him. You know how arrogant we can get, you know, and threw it, threw that special officer's card at him and told him, "Don't give me any crap. I'm one of you," you know. He showed me how much he could give me. But that man saved my life, really, because that was... that was July 17th, 1983. My first sobriety date was July 25th, 1983. And I had been in and out of AA since 1977. One of my sponsors, B.J. Smith, he's now deceased, married me and my first wife. And bless her heart, she's divorced her sixth husband and lives with her mother up in Yadkinville, North Carolina. I was husband number four, so she's a little bit on the bipolar side. But I went, it's always my fault though, because I was an alcoholic, but she never saw me drink. And I used that being married for the first 5 years. I never chaired meetings, and I remember coming here for the first, my first AA birthday, and I hadn't had a home group, I hadn't chaired a meeting. Y'all didn't have cake for me. I wasn't feeling special. I was pissed off, you know. I went into treatment at Ridgeview at 18 months sober. I was trying to make, if I listen to Larry Klinger, I don't know if any of y'all know any of these people. You know, Roland Bryce was, he was responsible for me starting to chair meetings. He told me I didn't have enough sobriety to, and I had 5 years of sobriety, and I knew the big book backwards and forwards, been in and out, or been to Ritchie, but I was always good at manipulating people. I flunked DAC. I just went long enough to be able to tell a judge what he wanted to hear, you know. And as always, I'll be a good boy. I said that prayer, "Dear God, please, if you just get me out of this one, I'll never drink again." The first time I ever said that prayer, and I meant it, two of my best friends, and I was supposed to go with them. We were all at a party, and they went to the Crystal, and they, over by Kennesaw Junior, well, it isn't Kennesaw Junior anymore, but Kennesaw College, and they died in a car crash, and they tried to get me to go with them, and I didn't go. And I remember I had a fifth of liquor saved. I was only 19. My baby sister and I turned legal drinking age the same year in 1971. That pissed me off. I drank on fake IDs in any way I could get it until age 21. And then Georgia lowered the drinking age limit to 18, you know. I really did. What could I say, you know? Yeah. But I remember giving my oldest brother Mose a fifth of liquor that I had saved for the weekend, and I said, "Take this. I am never going to drink again." I had nightmares, and I cried for a year after that. Every night a nightmare. And I think about the times, how many times that I never knew about that Scott Chief interceded in my life. Second miracle that happened this past week was, can everybody hear me? I got hearing aids and I didn't put them in because I did it to appease my wife, and she got tired of interpreting the television set when I had it full blast, and they have that background music, and I said, "Nancy, what did they say?" You know, or "Huh?" You know, it's time. And anyway, I was brought up not to talk about how much things cost, but I broke down. We got me some hearing aids, and I'm not going to tell you how much it cost, but I could have bought a brand new 1963 Corvette, brand new, and had more money left over than what those damn hearing aids cost. So I'm in Harbor Freight day before yesterday, and I'm trying to buy some stuff, and I'm driving home, and all of a sudden that thing would big thing, I call them earplugs or whatever, I don't know, when you get my age you can call anything anything, you know, and people understand, but it was gone. And I've got an Android phone that you can look at it and you can find where you've lost it. So I hightail it home, and in a panic I get Nancy to look in my clothing, you know, maybe it fell off in a big coat I had, and wasn't there. So I hightailed it back to Harbor Freight, and I parked kind of off to the side and parked where I thought I'd park. And I'm looking around the parking lot, and there's, I can't get a signal except for my left ear. And I look over, and the very next parking space, and I'll be John Brown. There's that hearing aid that I could have run over, or anybody in the whole world could have run over, and it was there, lying there in perfect working order. And I don't believe in luck. I used to, you know, how lucky am I? I believe in faith. You know, it's a spiritual axiom. Faith and fear cannot coexist. I used to not have any faith. I was baptized at 10. I was a double dunker. I got rebaptized. I probably ought to get rebaptized again in that creek right down there. But, you know, I always wanted to be this perfect little Christian for God, and I'd be balls to the wall, and then I'd burn out because I couldn't be perfect, you know. And then I'd start slacking off on my daily rituals and stuff like that, and all of a sudden that self-will run riot comes back and bites me on the butt, and God sort of taps me on the shoulder, and then he might hit me in the upside of the head, or have one of his little uniformed officers introduce me to the gated community down there on Memorial Drive. Been there, done that, did not like it, and did not get a t-shirt. But I hit the doors of AA in 1977, trying to get my old girlfriend back, but I went to the old Biscayne Room, which was on Peachtree Street, where they have a MARTA park and ride. And it was different back in those days. And I can remember that first meeting, I found my church. I had a truck that had a camper that you could walk through the back window, and I was going to go pick up every wino on Peachtree Street and bring them into AA, and I was going to save them, you know, because I'd found it was just magic to me, because people kind of understood that. I was young, though. I was 27 years old. I cleaned up real well because I didn't know what to expect, but I knew I'd better be kind of dressed up. And so I was dressed you know, with a coat and tie on and walk in the AA meeting. I didn't know what the hell I was walking into. But the third night I was there, there was a friend of mine that worked with DeKalb Board of Health. And this was one of the most beautiful men I've ever known. His name was Dave Clark. And after he retired, he would pick up garbage on Winway, you know, just... But he called me every day, every birthday. He played a flute, and he would wish me happy birthday, and he played happy birthday on the flute. I mean, this went on for decades until he passed away. Beautiful man, but he was there the third night, and I saw him there, and I did not want anybody to know I was in an AA meeting. And if there had been some kind of crack I could have crawled down into, I would have done it. I just went up to him and said, "Hey, Dave, my name's Russell. I'm an alcoholic." You know, I didn't know what else to say. He was there checking TB. You know, the health department was giving free TB scans. And I remember there's a young, older man named Wesley, and they had a detox room there. And I mean, he was having to hold his cough with both hands. And Maggie Harrison, I don't know if any of y'all remember Maggie, but I kept going. And back then, when I came back to AA, the format had changed. I didn't even know they had a fourth edition, and people just talked, you know, off whatever that, you know, to just start talking. I wasn't used to that. I've been in meetings here at 5:45 or whatever, 8 o'clock. You got to raise your hand. And a good discussion leader, if you didn't have, you know, some sobriety, and they didn't, everybody knows who's got sobriety and who doesn't. I could hold my hand up all meeting and not get called on. But I remember Maggie was leading the discussion, and you had to stand up, and I stood up, raised my hand and stood up, and I was so scared. I said, "My name's Russell, and I'm a gracious alcoholic." And I meant to say grateful, but I said gracious. I was so scared. And after everybody left, and Maggie looked at me dead in the eyes, she said, "Sit down and shut up. You can't be a saint by Thursday." I didn't open my mouth again for a long time. And people said, "Well, maybe you ought to try to go over to Napa. They got some young people there." And so I started going to Napa. And this was my 1977. I gave it a good hard try, but I couldn't let go of my friends, all my great drinking buddies and all that. You know, I was having too good a time. And eventually I didn't pick up my red chip, didn't go to any more meetings. And when you hang out with your old playmate in your playground, it's going to come back and bite you on the butt, and you're going to say, "Damn, how did I get drunk again?" You know, cunning, baffling, and powerful. I did that so many times. And I kept wondering why. I knew I was an alcoholic. And I knew that this program worked. I tried to convince my brother of that. A lot of good it did you. Anyway, in between my 4th and 5th DUI, I trashed up. Well, I went to bat for... some other buddies of mine, they trashed Hellendorf in, and I almost went to prison for a year, and that scared me. And that judge, James E. Palmer III, I'll never forget him, he said, "Against my better judgment, I'm going to give you a year's probation, but you'll be back in front of me because you'll break that probation." And I went up there to clear one of my buddies' names, and he was stupid enough to put his credit card on the, you know, the bill. But I was going to fall on the sword for everybody, and All I took was two fire extinguishers. I didn't do all the rest of the crap that they did. But about 20 miles down the road, I looked over at Ron and I said, that guy ain't never going to see me again. And 2 weeks to the day, I got my fifth DUI. And I said, I'm going to prison. Well, I just happened to luck out. I knew people that knew people that were very important people. And it ain't like that today. I mean, DUI court, drug court, they're serious. You screw up, you get a 24-hour stay in a gated community, you screw up twice, maybe a week, you get kicked out and you do whatever time's remaining. Jason Deal is the judge up in Gainesville, beautiful man, and he actually loves the people that come up in front of him. I have great respect for him, and I have great respect for the program, and I have tremendous respect for AA. Did y'all know that Bill Wilson got released from Towns Hospital on this day in 1934? Yeah. December 17th, he was released from Towns Hospital. I'm reading a book that Tim gave me about Abby Thatcher. And that's Bill's first sponsor, or only sponsor he ever really talked about. And we owe a tremendous amount of gratitude to Abby and for 12th Step and Bill. But if you really want to get into the founding history of it, it's fascinating how just everything fell into place and there's no mistakes in God's ordered world. I'm supposed to be here, you know, right now. There's one person in this room that is supposed to hear my message. Don't know who it is, but I hope I saved your life tonight. After that fifth DUI, I knew I was going to prison, but I had somebody help me one last time. And then, 2 years later, that sixth DUI, and after one of my restaurant owners wanted to drive me home, that's when the motorcycle wound up on top of me. That's when I had that spiritual awakening. Not then, I was too hungover the next day, but I had a little Lucy camper, you know, and I got in that camper and I got on my knees. And see, I was still single. I was 33 years old. And I asked God, I said, God, if there is a God, please help me if there is me. And I started going to meetings, and I was serious. I was serious every time, but this time it was for real, and it stuck. I got married. My sponsor, BJ, married me. Met my wife. Well, July 25th. Met my wife October 3rd. We got engaged on my birthday, October 9th, and got married January 1st. So I wouldn't forget the anniversary, but we got married in BJ's office. And he 12-stepped me. He said, Russell, aren't you tired of buying me new cars? You know, and I said, yeah. But I went, because I wanted to make 9-steps amends to an old girlfriend, I bought a car behind my new bride's back, and I happened to know this shrink in the meeting and talked him into letting me go to Ridgeview. And if I listened to Larry Klinger, I'd probably still be married to my first wife. But 20 months sober, I thought, well, I knew AA backwards and forwards, and anyway, they had me crying in group. So, long story short, I'm running out of time. Is it 9 o'clock? Oh, shit. Okay. I didn't even get sober. Okay. I'm sober 15 years. I'm a GSR here. I didn't get involved in the program until 5 years. Went through a divorce sober. And 15 years, I had a girlfriend that was half my age. My ego got out of balance. I quit going to meetings so much. I used to go to Occupy dances. But I put God in the back seat. And believe it or not, I picked up a beer on a Friday afternoon, and 24 beers later, I was puking all over myself and said, well, I got that out of my system. I'll never do that again. And 4 days later, just like the big book said, I'm back at it harder than ever and added a lot more other substances to my 10 years that I stayed out. And my sister contracted West Nile virus. My wife got in some trouble, and our dog died 9 years ago, a little over 9 years ago. Catapulted me into humbling myself again before God, because I was so ashamed I could not make it back. And when most people with double-digit sobriety, we kill ourselves. We do. And I'm very blessed that God showed me the grace. And see, I couldn't forgive myself. When you can't forgive yourself, you're putting yourself above God. Anyway, He is a magnificent God. He saved me twice this week. I'm so sorry I didn't get about my 9 years. It hadn't been easy this past 9 years, but this too shall pass. We do it one day at a time. And I promise you, if you keep coming back, you will have a miracle happen in your life. Had two of them this week. And if nobody's told you that they love you, let me tell you, I love you. I do, each and every one of you. I wish the best for you. And I hope that you can stay sober tonight. And hopefully thank God in the morning, do that third step prayer and ask Him to intervene for divine intervention. Because I can't get myself out of the way. I didn't get myself sober. Scott Chief did it. And the love and support that you will find in these meetings is the fellowship. But the steps is where the magic happens. Don't drink. Clean up. Come back to meeting and work with others. And you'll be amazed. I tend to live in self-pityville, population one, you know. That don't work. When I'm working with another alcoholic, my life is beautiful. Thank y'all for letting me share.
Thank you, Russ. Next year when you're celebrating 10, we'll let you start over for part two. Definitely want to hear about that last 10 years. June, would you please give out the chip?
I'm June. I'm an alcoholic. And here there is a chip system to mark your time away from your last drink. There is a white chip if you want to come in and start this way of life, or you're coming back. A silver chip for 30 days. There's a red chip for 90 days. Yellow for 6 months. Green for 9 months. Blue for years and multiples. Yay.
No, we won't get out of here until he does. Hey, Pat, my name is Alonzo Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. And it's my really great pleasure to give my friend and sponsee his 7-year check. Now, hold on. I first met him kind of like in a treatment center, and he scared me. Over time, he scared me less the more work he did. So if there's anybody here, any guy that needs a sponsor and needs some help, check him out. I'm so happy. Get as many more as you like.
Everybody, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. Hey,
Mike.
And like this is 7. It started right here. All I can say is if at a year I would have written down what I had hoped for, I would have sold it so far short, it would have just been criminal. If you just keep coming back and diving in, turn it over to God, pray, and continue to work hard at it, it's truly amazing what can happen. Thank you.
We'll offer the white chip one more time. All right, thank God and your sponsor for the chips you hold.
Thank you, James. Okay, so thank you all, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting. I remind each of you that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Something to care.